Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM Online, and at our website too, stevebick.com, and it's pouring down rain, and don't I sound thrilled? It should only be doing the same thing downstate. this is what you think about when you got a horse that is supposed to run, and she's in the sixth today, Carlisle Bell, and we want to get her on turf. They do want to get her on turf a little bit. She's run twice, but not going to be upset when word comes, if it does, that it's coming off the grass. There'll be all summer. She can have plenty of opportunity to run on the turf. Her two best performances, her two wins, are on wet tracks. So I would not be upset should that come to pass, no matter what. Just looking forward to getting her out there. And our homebred filly. And the Saturday action set. The weekend, we'll get to that. In fact, we're running on Saturday, too, with Kid Chocolate, with Manny Franco. The big story yesterday, of course, and we built up to it, the kickoff to the Canterbury season. We'll check in, pretty regularly with Canterbury participants, and we'll talk about the sequence, which paid a little under $10,000, and about twice the parlay, little over, let's say, 9,000, 92.23. And it was a tricky, it proved out as tricky as it kind of looked. That it's going to take a little bit to get used to Minnesota bred maiden special weights, Minnesota breds in general. The 13, was it 13 to 1? 14 to 1? Yeah. Yeah, $30.40. The Temujin Lady. The first-time starter for Joel Burnt. And, Andrew Offerman told you on Tuesday, and I said, any hints, any clues about the racetrack? And he said, plays to speed, and especially at the beginning of the meet, and even though the meet is a little delayed, they haven't had horses working over it for all that long, and speed... Not only did speed play well, but the last four races of the pick five were all won wire to wire. And that started with Temujin Lady, Danny Velasquez aboard, and then Ray's Angel. And Ray's Angel was, what was interesting about these four winners, you had two at 2 to 1, and then two at nice prices. And Fender Bender, who I got through the first leg, and I thought, okay, this is a good start, $16 for Fender Bender with Leslie Mowing for Carlos Moreno. But Temujin Lady, not only did Temujin Lady knock out the pick five, but didn't have her anywhere on the pick four tickets. So that was it. And interesting sideline is where the winners came from as they as they were wiring fields. You had the first time starter, but Fender Bender came out of Turf Paradise, and then you had three Will Rogers runners, Ray's Angel, who figured prominently with Arrieta for Michael Baylor. And Unleash the Beast. And Unleash the Beast was a $17 winner and just, you know, was being seemingly propelled on the front end. So we got to be aware of this. You know, when you're wading into a new venue and start to play it on a regular basis, you know, kind of feel your way and learn some of these things. And Vegan, you know, Vegan Goes Best was second choice behind Fairly Honest. But, you know, the horses that we're chasing, and even, you know, even if you had a savvy jock that, you know, was trying to be more forward than usual, it was hard. It was hard. So you had $16.60, $30.40, $5.80, $17, and $6, and $9,223, basically twice the parlay. And I know some people were, and I think Canada in particular, Andrew Offerman looking into HPI and, you know, what the workings are in terms of anybody that didn't offer the wager. So if we get more information today, I mean, certainly going into the weekend, but, you know, part of that, the working with the tote company and everything else. But Andrew Offerman and I kind of exchanged some notes, and so he's working on that for anybody that didn't, that wanted to bet play and didn't get to put a play in. And, you know, there is the argument, I suppose, and we'll get more information, you know, the idea that, you know, when you push the takeout to that degree down to this level, especially on the multi, the multis are, you know, don't necessarily need, I mean, you know, the 12%, now 10, the multi-race wagers, you know, only get takeout even if it's, you know, even if it's a standard, you know, 20%, 17%, 23%, whatever. It only gets taken once. And so multi-race wagers are a little different. They've kind of caught a wave in terms of the marketing. But, you know, the place where, you know, takeout reduction would really, you know, mean the most would be on the whips, on win, play, show. And, you know, you think back to when Barry Schwartz at Naira, Barry was making incredible progress, trimming, lowering the takeout in New York. And I want to say got down as low as 14% on whips. And then the Racing and Wagering Board had to come in and just screw it up for everybody. They came in because they had to approve everything, and they decided that you know, the takeout had to be increased. So, you know, that's one of the, you know, that's one of the difficulties that certainly in New York was dealt with. Before we move on away from Canterbury, I should mention also in that stake that closed out the card, the 300-yard, the Cam Casby, with a salute to the late Camilla Casby. Polar Express, the winner for Jason Olmstead. And owner Summer Run, homebred 5-year-old mare by Freight Train B. So that was the stake feature on opening day at Canterbury. They handled 102,000, and, you know, they take 10% off of that, and basically 10 winners, 9,200 each. Pretty nice. Yeah, pretty nice start, and I can only assume that it grows from here. So we'll keep at it and see if we can't score along the way. And speaking of scores, after the first break, we're going to talk to Gary Young,
Gary is going to,
I assume, be ebullient after yesterday's headline-grabbing purchase at OBS, day two, and Gary Young taking home a $1,350,000, not this time Philly, who breezed really nicely, sub-21, and this Philly from top line. Gary did not, at least yesterday, at least I haven't seen about the client. We'll see if Gary is able to, you know, talk about who he bought this Philly for. But it certainly was a mammoth pinhook success, purchased for $135,000, so 10 times the yearling price, bred by International Equities. And out of She's a Smoke Show, HIP 1254. The day overall, we'll get we'll get some feedback from Gary about, you know, how he thinks the sale's gone. And I don't think I saw anything else that he did on. I think he may have done. Yeah, he may have bought something on day one. We'll find out. But we'll get Gary's feel for how it's gone. Another familiar name, DJ Stable, the Greens, $800,000 for the Candy Ride Colt from Nick Demerick. It was HIP 561. So the highest male early in the session and the highest female late. So those were the two. You also had three sellers over $700,000, a $750,000 Ghost Zapper Colt. So another big number. That was yesterday, the Ghost Zapper. You had the $700,000 Philly, the Distorted Humor, New York bred, that Donato Lani took home for the Chews. Susan Chew, Bayoma, $700,000. And also Mike Shannon as well. Mike Shannon, as an agent for Russell Welch, took home the Empire Maker Colt that went 10-1 out of Smart Farming, and that rings a bell. Randy Bradshaw, the consigner here. So a couple others in the $400,000 range. Some international, a couple of international. I saw a few different international purchases. Haven't heard yet from Tom Ventura about how many HIPs came via the phone. Curious, we track that. I told you yesterday, 9 of them. And on day one, and 50 horses were bid on over the new system. So we'll get some more about the sale from Gary Young. And see what else he's got and who he's been impressed with. Certainly for not this time. I mean, getting it done on the racetrack and then another, you know, had a good day in day one. And curious now, actually, let's see how many more are left that are going to come up the next 2 days, second half of the sale here. And there's quite a few. Wow. There's actually a bunch today. There's 2, 4, 6, 8, 9. Looks like 9 today. And then I guess 9. And then maybe a 10th, it looks like. So it looks like there's still plenty of action on the not this times to come. And happened to notice that a Brody's cause went just one of them yesterday, but I think 130-something thousand. So that's one of the names that kind of caught our eye. We'll talk to Dick Powell, of course, today. We'll get some Hong Kong conversation. I've been talking to Tony Black all morning. There's some movement in Pennsylvania, and there had been apparently some thought or some, the door had kind of cracked open a little bit in Philadelphia, but there's no confirmation, and I guess negotiations continue. However, Todd Mostoller with the news this morning about Penn National, and Penn National is all set to resume. They will start next Friday, a week from tomorrow, on the 19th. They'll take entries on Tuesday, 72-hour spread from entry to race day, and for the first 3 weeks, they'll race Wednesday and Friday, and then they'll go to three nights a week after July 4th, it looks like. The interesting thing that happened, it looked like Presque Isle was marching toward a restart and that Penn was going to be afterward. Now, in fact, Penn National ends up being ready to go, and Presque is still on hold a little bit. And part of that is, according to Todd, because of the ship-in nature of the operation at Presque Isle, because everybody kind of comes in from everywhere. And so that dealing with that factor seems to be delaying the finalization of a plan for Presque Isle. So Penn National will be the first thoroughbred track to get back going in the Commonwealth, and keep tracking it from there. Tony Black actually kind of tracking the story for us in the Philadelphia area. So we'll see what else Tony might know later this morning. Steve Haskin, and if you follow Haskin on Facebook, you saw countless pictures of Steve and actually Case. I would pull up that because we'll go get Gary at 20 instead. Stay right here because Nick Luck is going to join us this morning after Gary Young. We're going to do our early Royal Ascot preview. We'll get Nick's thoughts. Give us some perspective. All right. So Gary Young, Nick Luck, Dick Powell, Tony Black, Steve Haskin started to say, Haskin going up to Connecticut to Weathersfield and see the grandson, Theo. And Tina came back last night from Rochester, where she's babysitting Monday, Tuesdays, Wednesdays. She's going to be babysitting Lennon. And Tina's still a tither over being granny, and actually it clearly knocked her out because she slept about 11 hours. She says she's not in mothering shape yet. Oh yeah, you're gonna blame it on the drive. That's pretty funny. It wasn't the drive. It was taking care of the baby. So she's gonna get back into full granny mode, or full caretaking mother mode. I love it. Rich Anglader as well this morning. And before we get Gary Young, should also mention from the racing results in addition to Canterbury, yesterday the Gulfstream race that we talked to Mike Welch about, and Sol Volante running down stablemate, among other things, at Tay and Dien, I guess you could say disappointing. And Sol Volante, no figure come back yet. Visually, look good. And don't know how much came, how much it took out of him. But Patrick Biancone saying that is still under consideration for the Belmont. So that was You know, that was the result there. And, you know, as mentioned, that field, everybody was focused on Sol Vellante and Ete Indienne and Chivalry. But that, you know, the other three, I said, they were not tomato cans. And Jesus's team ran very well. And there were a few strides where the Jose D'Angelo runner for Grupo 7, there was a couple of strides where, you know, it looked like he had a real, you know, real chance in there. Ultimately, though, Sol Vellante by a little less than a length under Luca Panici, and Chivalry, you know, who was sparring with Ete Indienne, you know, right from the bell. I mean, they got separation in the first half mile, and Chivalry able to stay on, beaten, you know, less than two lengths. The chart calls it a length and a half. But Chivalry, you know, staying on better than Ete Indienne, who ended up another four lengths behind Chivalry, and went off as the 3-5 favorite. I mean, really took the money, and Sol Vellante ends up paying $640. So those that backed Sol Vellante, you gotta, you know, in a six horse field, you did okay. So we'll see. We'll wait for Patrick to make a determination and see if they'll go forward to the Belmont. And I'm sure, you know, with Dean and Patty Reeves, they like the big stages. So I'm sure Dean and Patty, if the horses, if Patrick and Andy Biancone say, you know, the horse is all right and acting good, I imagine we'll see him. So it was just interesting to have, you know, a race that close, you know, to a Belmont stake, you know, have a horse run, you know, 10 days out. Gary Young is joining us from Ocala. And when the alert came yesterday, you know, the sales alerts from, you know, the various trades, $1,350,000 new session and sale topper. And then I saw Gary Young's name attached. Gary, congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
This one, you know, she breezed, obviously, you know, really well going a quarter. Talk about, you know, the evaluation process and, you know, the decision-making process, and obviously you weren't going to be outbid.
You know, her work was, I think it was the first work of the morning, one of the first works of the morning when she worked. The track was, it was tight and everything, but I mean, she just came down there and, I mean, she just, you know, her time was off the charts good, her gallop out was good, and then when you go and look at her at the barn, she's a very, very pretty filly. Her mother used to run in California. She's a smoke show. Peter Erton trained her. She was a stakes place decent filly. And, you know, it's probably just, she did everything right. She presented herself well in the back ring. It was late in the day, so you could, and most all the big players were still hanging around the back, so you got the idea that it wasn't going to be easy. You know, when it all fell out, my client just asked me to keep bidding, and we were getting towards the end of our rope. But when we bid $1,350,000, no one answered back, and she was ours. So that's you know, we'll find out in about 3 or 4 months whether we did the right thing or the wrong thing. But there's no buyer's remorse this morning, and I very much like this filly. The stallion is off to a good start. He has two debut winners already. You can remember that when he came to Santa Anita to train for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, in which he lost the Classic Empire, but he ran a very, very good race that day, and without not having a whole lot of experience at the time. Unfortunately, his career didn't last that long, but he definitely showed brilliance while he was around, and I think he's passed it on to this filly, and we just hope that she fulfills her promise.
Gary, speak a little bit more to the first crop sire aspect of this and, you know, your general approach to the first croppers. And I know that, you know, the client is going to remain undisclosed for now, but, you know, how much of it is, you know, your views and integrating with the clients about, you know, spending seven figures on, you know, on a sire that's only had a half a dozen runners or so out there on the racetrack?
Well, you know, I mean, TaylorMade stands not this time, and his yearlings were pretty well received. And, you know, it's a roll of the dice whenever you buy one, obviously. You know, if she'd have been by a proven top class stallion, she probably went for around $2 million. You know, I really believe that she was that impressive on the track and at the barn. But she's, you know, there was some nice first year sire horses in the sale. Two Hips After She sold, Aaron Wellman bought the California Chrome, who a very good looking colt. And you know, sometimes you just gotta, you're there to buy athletes, and if the athletes happen to be by unproven first year sires, sometimes you gotta take a shot, and sometimes you want to stay with the proven sires. But but yesterday was time to take a shot. I like the
nice
idea that
he's had two
first-out winners already, too. I like
yes.
I like that also.
Yes. Well, looking at day one, and, you know, the general buzz, and going back to the Breeze show, I mean, he was one of the, you know, one of the names that just was universally impressing, it seems.
That's the fastest the horse has ever breezed at Ocala for the sale, or probably ever. I mean, you start getting down into 20 and 1, I mean, and galloping out in 30, going out in 32 and stuff like that, and then still galloping out with good rhythm around the turn. That's an awful lot of talent. And, you know, hopefully she shows it when she starts working and running.
Do we know who she's going to be trained by?
I will talk with the man about that. I mean, we got some ideas, but I will talk with the man about that.
Is this somebody entering the game on a new basis, or some?
It's been a little while, but this is the biggest step he took, and he told me going in he wanted to, and you know, he did. That's for damn sure. I mean, you know, originally we were going to go to $1 million, and, you know, he just kept, you know, I just was asking your call, I'd say, as the person answered us back, your call. And, you know, we were getting towards the end of our rope, but, like, you know, obviously the other person was too. It's a lot of money. But, you know, he answered, and that's how the day shook out, you know.
I love it. Is that the highest purchase you've been involved in?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Yes, it is. So.
Well, in good hands with you, and how, you know, let's get a general, couple of general points about the sale, Gary. And, you know, we talked, you know, just with Tom Ventura about, you know, how things were
you know, were shaping up, and yesterday with Joe Applebaum. What have you felt, and you know, what's the general consensus about the marketplace?
It's still fairly strong at the top. The middle market seems to be the range that has been affected most by the economic uncertainty and everything else that's happened in this game, in this world, actually, over the recent months. There was not as many people here as there normally is. I mean, usually, as we all know, these sales are conducted here. Their main sales are in March and April, and their final sale is in June. Well, you know, because of what went on this year, nothing is normal, but some people, you know, they have their schedule already planned out, and, you know, they couldn't adjust it. So it wasn't as many people here. When they let a good one in the ring that had good confirmation and vetted okay, there was still real money for them. But the middle market did seem to be a little bit wanting yesterday. It did. So, you know, it's been a hell of a year, both economically and everything else. I mean, for horse racing, for life, for, you know, this is something we never thought we'd see in our lifetime. Let's face it.
Well, you got a couple more days here at OBS, and give us a thought also about, you know, who you've been impressed with. You mentioned, you know, the big group of first crop sires. Day one, Air Force Blue had a good showing. I've been noting that Brody's Cause seems to be selling through. Everybody, you know, that has seen one, they've all found new homes. You mentioned California Chrome. Frosted had a good day day one. Spitester, you know, regional name, upstart. What else? Who else have you been impressed?
You know, there's been a few, you know, everyone seemed to have one or two that look good. There was a couple Outworks that look good. I mean, it's there's been a lot of first-year sires in here. There was a Can the Man that actually worked well for Eddie Woods. You know, it's, you know, the stallion game, for better or for worse out here, you know, you better break running or people will cool on you in a real hurry. But there appeared to be a few first-year sires, I should say, this year that at least had some good moving horses at this sale. And, you know, we'll go on to Maryland after that and see how they perform there. And, you know, most tracks are up and running with their two-year-olds now. So in addition to one selling in the sales ring, we'll get to evaluate them by how they perform in the afternoon, which is what it really counts, as we all know.
How much more shopping you got to do today, tomorrow?
Today I'm a little light. Tomorrow I'm going to try to bag a couple more before I leave town. And then I'm home for a week and off to Maryland to eat crab cakes and play some golf at Greystone with my friend Robert and hang out at Timonium. It's a nice place, and then I won't be home for that long after that, and I'll probably be coming back here in July. I probably won't need many sweaters in Ocala in July, but if I can find a good horse, it'll be nice. So that's about it. It's just been it's just so weird. I mean, usually, when, you know, by now we've got the Derby in the books and the Preakness in the books, and it's just you know, the whole Triple Crown is usually done, and this year it's just really, it's mind-boggling how things have happened this year. I mean, I couldn't help but feel bad for the Connections of Maxfield yesterday. That was, you know, I mean, he's a beautiful moving horse, and it's just unfortunate, very unfortunate.
Well, I exchanged a couple of texts with with Brendan, and he, you know, despite how strong the barn is overall, he really says this was tough. This one really hurt him, and he had real hopes, especially the way things, you know, when you get turned away from the Breeders' Cup the way he did, and you know, you think, well, there's not going to be any chance for, you know, the classics in the spring, and then all of a sudden there's a chance for the classics in the spring.
Do you believe that?
It's unbelievable. It's rough. Gary, before we go, too, since three-year-olds came up, your thoughts about Honor AP and Authentic and last week in the Santa Anita Derby?
Well, Honor AP, he's definitely a real, you know, he's a real racehorse. I mean, you know, David and Gordon went to $850 on him, which was a lot of money. And, you know, he's developed in typical John Sheriff fashion and very impressive last week. Authentic is still a very talented horse. It's a little bit debatable, I think, still on the mile and a quarter, but what happened the other day, he's a quirky horse, you know, we've seen that before, and there was nothing outside of him. So when he broke, if you watch the head on for the race, he veered out more than a little. He really, really veered, and Drayden had to grab him for, you know, just to keep him from veering anymore, and that kind of put the bit in his mouth and got him a little bit more revved up than I'm sure Drayden and Bob would have liked to seen him, and that didn't help his chances, especially when he's running against a very good improving horse that got a good pace to run at, and my man Mike Smith, he won another big race. Imagine that, huh? But no, Authentic is a very, very talented horse. He didn't do himself any favors. By the way, he came out of the gate the other day. Very talented horse, though.
Gary Young, everybody, and making the headlines yesterday with the Bay Filly by Not This Time, and a $1,350,000 purchase that will stand, it seems, as a likely sale topper. Gary, good luck the next couple of days, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Steve, very good talking to you, and have a good day. Have a good day.
There he is, Gary Young, everybody, and you got to be happy for Gary, and we're anxious to know where this filly is going to go, and who might find her in their shed row. We'll stay right here because Nick Luck is standing by. I reached out to Nick, as we always do, with the Royal Ascot days away, and the early declarations for day one came out yesterday, and that was enough for me to reach out for Nick, and available now, so we'll talk to him. And Nick, good morning or early good afternoon, and welcome back.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having us. Yeah, great to be back on the show, and looking forward to next week, which is going to be strange with no crowd, but still pretty wonderful in terms of the racing that we've got to look forward to.
Well, and you know, there was, of course, uncertainty as to, you know, how they were even going to, you know, put together. I mean, the last major festival meeting, Cheltenham, and the aftermath of that was not good in terms of the spread of, you know, of COVID, and it put into question, you know, how this was going to come off, but things seem to have, you know, settled back into a nice routine now.
Yeah, and I think that the sport had to contend with a bit of a PR issue as regards Cheltenham. You know, there's no meaningful data that is able to definitively tell you that Cheltenham was a super spreader. It's only anecdotal, but clearly the sport took a while to recover from having decided to press ahead with that meet right on the cusp of when things were about to be locked down. It was very, very difficult. And I sympathize with the people who had to try and make that decision. Of course, you wouldn't have done it if you had to make the decision now. But it certainly was preying on the sports administrators' minds when they were lobbying government for the resumption of horse racing behind closed doors. And it's worth pointing out that with that in the background or as the backdrop, they've done a pretty good job to get horse racing going from June the 1st and beating every other sport to the punch, and by quite some way as well. So really, racing has had racing and greyhound racing and a little bit of snooker essentially has had its own way now for a couple of weeks, and will do so through much of Ascot Week, which is a very important shop window now for the sport as it tries to get itself back on its feet, both in terms of public interest and in terms of its own finances.
The question that, of course, we'll start to broach as we look at the calendar and the schedule of the standards. The big issue became how much international participation was going to be available in terms of shipping in, and it affected a couple of barns that had been thinking about going. Wesley Ward pressing forward with a group of horses, but a few others, including Graham Motion and Kenny McPeak, who had thought about coming, Nick, they backed off and are making other arrangements.
Now, you may be aware of something that I'm not aware of, Steve. I mean, I until yesterday was still of the view that sharing was coming to Royal Ascot, but you may have heard something that I haven't heard, in which case,
no,
thanks for sharing it with me.
Nice. I had thought that Graham had backed off of that, and when McPeak had also had made overtures about coming and then came away. That'd be wonderful if sharing makes the trip.
Well, while we're on this call, I will make sure I find out either which way to see if there's been any updates. Since certainly earlier this week, Ashin Murphy, who's been booked to ride or had been booked to ride, sharing was himself sharing clips of the horse. And clips of his own excitement at riding her. So, at this stage, I believe that she is coming, which
Excellent.
Would be a massive, massive runner in the Coronation Stakes. I think she'd have a great shot, by the way, if she does come.
You bring up Murphy, and he had a pretty eventful weekend with his first classic, and of course we were kind of celebrating it yesterday in conversation with Sid Fernando, given the Kitten's Joy lineage, and I did see Murphy. He was all over Twitter for several days.
Yeah, he's been great. He was fantastic last season when he was crowned champion jockey for the first time, as regards his engagement with the media, and not just cooperating with interviews, but front foot with his media advisors, getting out there and posting content that has really enlivened that whole scene and has captured the imagination of a broader and, dare I say it, younger audience. So he's been fantastic. Listen, we know there's never going to be another Frankie Dettori, and we're blessed that at nearly 50, Dettori is still youthful enough in spirit that he wants to crack on for another 4 or 5 years at least. But Ashin is doing a fantastic job of promoting the sport, and he has become the go-to guy for anyone who needs a jockey that doesn't have a top jockey available. So all power to his elbow. Wonderful to see him lifting the 2,000 guineas last weekend. And you mentioned Kitten's Joy's lineage and influence. It was even more marked, the victory of Cameco, because Kitten's Joy's best progeny to have raced in Europe to this point has been Roaring Lion, who so sadly died after covering just a handful of mares at stud, owned by Sheikh Farhad, in the same silks, ridden by the same jockey. To have another son of Kitten's Joy, another relatively cheaply bought son of Kitten's Joy, come along so soon to replace him at that level is nothing short of remarkable.
Dive in, Nick, and let's talk about the schedule, and even before the uncertainties, right? They the Royal Ascot team had made news just by kind of changing things and adding to the schedule. Talk about that.
They've done a very good job. I mean, you're on a hiding to nothing because you can't get it completely how everybody wants it in such unusual circumstances. But I think they've got it about as good as they could get it. Clearly, the race program is going to be very different to how it was, and there are a number of reasons for that. First, the Derby and Oaks at Epsom fall after Royal Ascot this year. So there are races at Royal Ascot which provide natural stepping stones to the rescheduled Derby and Oaks on Saturday, the 4th of June. July, I should say. So, therefore, the King Edward VII for three-year-old colts and the Ribblesdale Stakes for three-year-old fillies have been moved to the first day to allow horses who might be wanting to use that as a Derby or Oaks trial to enough time to recover and then head to Epsom. By contrast, we've only been able to have two-year-olds racing in this country since June the 1st. So horses have been making their debuts. Likely is the horses that are running in the two-year-old races have had one start just a couple of weeks ago. So therefore, the two-year-old races, by and large, have been shunted to the back end of the week. Now, once you do the former and the latter, you then completely mess up your race program. So there's an awful lot of jiggery-pokery they've had to do, and they've done it extremely effectively. They've also had to add races because they want to give as many people a chance of running at Royal Ascot as possible. There are certain restrictions on field sizes because of the COVID regulations, which means that there are now consolation races for those big, big field handicaps like the Hunt Cup and the Wokingham. So there will be a second division, if you like, of those races as well. If trying to pick a winner in one sort of 25-plus runner race isn't hard enough, try doing it in two. So they've done a good job. They've enabled horses from Ireland, most notably, but also from the United States, to come, but only for the group races and the listed races. But that means that the best races, the elite-level races, will still have Aidan O'Brien in them, which is obviously the most crucial point, and other trainers from Ireland, and the likes of Wesley and Graham and anybody from the US who's wanted to come. Essentially, if they want to come, they put systems in place whereby they send the horse, but they don't come themselves. So the horses essentially get unloaded at this end, and then they are taken care of by locally based horsemen. That's how it's going to work. So it's going to run well, I think, from a television point of view, even if the actual occasion is not going to be the actual occasion.
By the way, I did reach out to Graham. She's working tomorrow, and assuming everything goes well, she is a go.
Good. I mean, I think that's excellent news. I think, as I say, I think the form of that race last year at the Breeders' Cup was very strong. You know, it gives some indication of where she would stand in relation to very smart fillies this side of the pond, Dyer and Albina, and she was comfortably on top that day, admittedly in conditions that she would be more accustomed to. But I think that certainly said that she was worth having a go.
Let's dive in and touch on, you know, some of the spots and some of the, you know, the annual, you know, the biggest moments that, you know, that are produced. And of course, the, you know, day one, Nick, it's always remarkable to American audiences how the stand, you know, immediately grabs you and wastes no time.
Yeah, and obviously, because of the what I was talking about earlier, because of all the races being moved around, Steve, so normally you'd start with those three Group 1 straight off the bat. You'd start with the Queen Anne, and then you'd have the King's Stand, and then you'd have the James's Palace, and then, you know, so you'd have that really impactful start. It's not quite the same this time, but you still get the two Group 1s on the first day, and you still get the Queen Anne up as the second race on the card, and you still get the King's Stand on that Tuesday. So you still get two of the key races on that day. And we've got the pre-entries through for those already. The Queen Anne will feature as favourite, a horse that you'll be well familiar with, Circus Maximus, who ran quite well in the Breeders' Cup last year and was a winner of the St. James's Palace last year. He's shown he's very effective at Ascot. I don't know, he's as short as 3-1 in places, and it's 7 or 8-1 bar one. I'd be looking to try and get a horse passed him each way at double figure odds, to be honest, at this stage. He's a nice horse, but I don't think he's by any stretch of the imagination unbeatable. And I'd certainly be looking at, I think this is going to be a big field race for the Queen Anne, and I'd be looking at a horse at bigger odds if I was going to take one in here. I mean, Mustache is 12-1. He's the highest rated horse in the race, and I'd certainly be quite interested in him. I'd be interested as well in Lord North if he lines up here, but I think he might go to the Prince of Wales instead.
The Tuesday action, in addition to the Queen Anne, and I'm just thumbing through my material here. Where are we with the King Stand, the Duke of Cambridge, the Ascot Stake, the King Edward? What am I missing?
Yeah, one of the most interesting horses running on. The races that would normally run later in the week, they're now running on Tuesday. That are 3-year-olds. Now going to be used as Derby and Oaks trials, or the Ribblesdale for fillies, and the Edward the Seventh for the colt.
Okay.
And
yeah,
I mean, Gosden's absolutely loaded in the Ribblesdale. He's got 3 of the first 4 in the market, and frankly, Darling's one of the most impressive horses to have been seen, I think, since the resumption. She was very, very good the other day on the and when she made a comeback. I'm really looking forward to seeing her. The Edward the Seventh, you know, Mogul is already favourite in a lot of places for the Derby, so he's going to need to win that and win it well. But if Aidan O'Brien runs Arthur's Kingdom as well, just keep your eye on him. I think he's a pretty smart horse, and he's a 10-1 shot at the moment, so he'd be another one that I'd be mildly interested in. I think the big sprint, Batash, is the even money favourite. He's yet to win this race. He's won every other big 5-furlong race. It's just the stiff finish at Ascot that finds him out. Again, at evens, I'd be tempted to have a little look elsewhere. His stablemate, you know, Equilateral, 20-1. He's a very talented horse on his day. He's got a few issues. He's got a hole in him somewhere. But if he feels like it, he's way too big a price at 20s.
And, you know, you bring up an interesting point when you talk about the horses having had preps. How different under the circumstances, Nick? Who's compromised by the interruption to the calendar, and who do you have confidence in in terms of barns that will be ready no matter what?
Well, the interesting thing is, so take Aidan O'Brien for example. Now, habitually, the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen him start steadily enough in March, you know, March, early April, and then he's really firing come Guineas time in the beginning of May. Well, because we've only started in June this time around, he's hit the ground running. I mean, these horses are ready to go. You know, they know that. I would imagine he's been essentially operating the same training regimen and getting them straight for the races that matter, and so therefore they're not needing the race as much as they might need their first run of the season if they were back home running in trial races and prep races. They've been doing their trials and prepping at home. So I wouldn't have any issues as regards his horses. Same with, you know, Godson's horses have come out of the blocks hard. Andrew Balding, sensational, the start that he's made. You know, Rafe Beckett's won with 8 out of his last 10 runners. There's plenty of the big stables that are firing already. Some of the bigger stables numerically that have been a little slower. Richard Farr, he hasn't hit top gear quite yet. Richard Hannon hasn't quite hit top gear yet. But you know, a lot of the big battalions with the nicely bred horses seem to be firing quite successfully.
Now I've got my complete schedule in front of me. And Nick, among the early part of the week, what other matchups are in the offing that people should be excited about?
I've talked a little bit about Tuesday. Perhaps one race I didn't mention on Tuesday was the Duke of Cambridge Stakes. I'd expect Nazif to be quite hard to beat in that. I don't think Terrabellum will run there. I think Terrabellum will run in the Queen Anne, most likely, with the sex allowance. She was quite an impressive winner last back end. I think in terms of sentiment, people will be very excited by the Gold Cup on Thursday, with Stradivarius looking for yet another victory in that race. He made his comeback over an inadequate mile and a half the other day and ran quite a nice race. So he clearly is going to be a horse taking a big chunk of the public's affection. But if Kew Gardens, who beat him on Champions Day, comes back for another crack, I would narrowly favour Kew Gardens if he comes for the Gold Cup. Then the St. James's Palace Stakes, the three-year-old colts. Because we've already had a 2,000 guineas, that race has a slightly better shape to it because you're already getting a rematch, even at this early stage of the season. You know, the winner won't run. He's going to go to the Derby by the looks of it. But you're looking at the second and third, Wichita and Pinatubo, good old-fashioned Godolphin, Coolmore Clash, chuck in the Gosden horse, the Kingman horse, Palace Pier, who was very impressive at Newcastle the other day when beating a nice horse of Hugo Palmer's. I thought he was impressive enough to be respected there. So those three, I think, are possibly capable of serving up one of the races of the week in the St. James's Palace. And Palace Pier has a similar sort of profile going into the race that Without Parole did a couple of years ago before he won it.
You bring up Pinatubo, and you know, how much of a disappointment was that effort on Saturday?
Well, a bit of a disappointment because he was such a good two-year-old. You know, he was rated 128 at the end of his two-year-old career, which is £2 in advance of the figure that was recorded by Frankel after his two-year-old career. So given what he did in the National Stakes last year and at Goodwood, you know, if that Pinatubo had the same dominance over his peers as he had done the previous season, then he'd have won. But clearly, you know, the other horses have caught up to him. He was brilliant as a two-year-old, but he was also relatively precocious. So, you know, I think the other horses have caught up a little bit. But that form that he showed the other day and the fact that his jockey could still half take a pull in the middle of the race suggests to me that he has retained his ability, even if he hasn't made the same sort of progress as his peers. And therefore, I'd be very surprised, as long as he doesn't deteriorate, were he not to be able to pick up a top-level race as a three-year-old. He's certainly bred to, and it could well be at Ascot. Importantly, he's had to pass a stalls test to be allowed on the racetrack again, because he can be a bit funny in the gate, and Charlie Appleby took a third gate ticket in a year, which means that asked for him to be loaded last. Now, if you can ask for a horse to be loaded last and you can receive permission for a horse to be loaded last, if you do that three times, then in order to run again, you have to take a stalls test. Now, stalls tests have not been happening since the resumption because they just didn't want to add to any other logistical complications when, you know, personnel allowed on the racetrack were so few anyway. So they've had to engineer a stalls test on the Newmarket Gallops in order to allow him to pass British Horse Racing Authority guidelines to run at Ascot. So it's a rather arcane point, but anyway, one that I've shared with you.
No, I'm glad. No, that's interesting, actually, and because you wouldn't think that you could, you know, ask for an advantage of that kind, you know, repeatedly. It would seem, well, for lack of a better word, untoward.
Yeah, which is why you can't do it over and over and over again without then having to prove that you can actually go in and come out in proper fashion. So, yeah, so that's the deal with Pinatubo. He takes on Wichita. I thought Wichita ran a lovely race in the guineas as well. You know, he was closing back down on the winner at the line. He'd been on the sharp end throughout. He and Pinatubo made their move roughly together and probably in the hottest part of the race, whereas the winner found himself a little further back, which, given the way the race panned out, was probably to his advantage. So I'm looking forward to that rematch. And as I say, Chuck Palace Pier in there, and you've got a hell of a race. As I say, I think the Kingstown the first day is a great sprint race. The Derby and what are now going to be the Derby and Oaks trials are suddenly more interesting because they're trial races rather than afterthoughts, which make them sort of more interesting races in and of themselves. The two-year-old races, no one's got a clue, really. There's loads that have been impressive so far, and the calibre of two-year-old races so far has obviously been quite good because everyone's been waiting. So all those whiz-bang horses that you were expecting out in April and May have had to wait now, and you might be getting a slightly different type of, slightly classier horse winning these two-year-old races than you might have done in an ordinary early season race before the pandemic came along. So, it's hard for me to point you in the direction of horses that I think will definitely do the business at Ascot.
Well, and speaking of, that's a great opportunity to mention the Wesley Ward runners, the juveniles, and Sheriff Bianco and Sunshine City in the Windsor Castle. Murphy on Sheriff Bianco and Frankie Dettori on Sunshine City. That's on Wednesday. Flying Aletha with Dettori in the Albany. Golden Pal without a jock named for the Norfolk. And then Kamari with Dettori in the Commonwealth Friday, and Campanelle. And bringing up Campanelle, actually, Nick, talk about the Queen Mary. It's not going to be a big group, but it seems really, well matched in there.
I find these two-year-old races at the moment are almost impossible to try and work out, because we've had such little evidence. We've only had a week or two of two-year-old races to go at. Everyone wants to try and have a runner in these. I honestly am at a complete loss as regards the two-year-old races. Aidan O'Brien has introduced a couple of extremely smart-looking two-year-olds in the last couple of days, but whether they'd be able to get to Ascot is a moot point. As far as the Queen Mary's concerned, I think the one that Campanelle would have to beat is Frenetic, who's a daughter of Kodiak, who made her debut yesterday at Navan, and she absolutely bolted up for Jer Lyons, who's a tremendous trainer and has got a very good record with the horses that he's run in this grade. Took down a pair of Ballydoyles, Mother Earth and Snowfall. Now, I'm imagining that Aidan O'Brien's going to want to run some of these horses that have been beaten in two-year-old races, but it's a question of whether they survive the ballot, because they've got to favour winners first, then horses who finish second, then third, then fourth, then unraced, then unplaced. So you really need to have won one to be guaranteed of a run. And I would say that what we've seen so far, Frenetic is the likeliest main danger to Campanelle in the Queen Mary.
And what else? What have we missed? Did we get talk the Gold Cup? We'll pass the Norfolk and the Prince of Wales on Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay. So the Prince of Wales Stakes this year, we had a half hope that Enable might be turning up in the Prince of Wales. But I think sensibly they're going to run her in the Coral Eclipse, which will take place, weirdly, again, you've got to get your head around this. This will take place on a Sunday, and it will take place on the Sunday after the Derby. So Sunday the 5th of July, the Coral Eclipse. We will see Enable there. That was the race that she made a comeback in last year, and she won it well. And she will be taken on by Gaeaf, who won the first Group 1 of the season, the Coronation Cup, which was run at Newmarket on Guineas weekend. And that is going to be a race to savour, because Gaeaf broke the track record, and he was absolutely magnificent. As for the Prince of Wales, is minus Enable. Japan is going to be the short price favourite, the Judmont International winner from last year. He should be, really, Aidan O'Brien's big older horse flag bearer this season. He should be winning a lot, and a lot of good races, Japan, and I'd be disappointed if he doesn't make a winning start here. He will have some meaningful opposition. Barney Roy is a likely Godolphin runner in the race, the sort of resurgent back from stud, been in Dubai, did very well there. He looks sort of almost the horse he was before he was retired. Headman, target as yet undecided, could yet go to the Queen Anne, but the Prince of Wales, I think, is cutting up a slightly lighter race in terms of numbers. A Dave if the ground went soft, but it's a bit of a big if, even though we've had a bit of rain around the last few days. The forecast at the beginning of next week is quite good, and we have had a very, very dry spell since April. I think John Gosnell run two in the Prince of Wales's. I think he's likely to run Lord North, who was quite impressive at Haydock on his comeback, and Medea, Group 1 winning filly from last year. And then there could be all sorts of other bits and pieces in there. Andrew Balding's got a couple of horses in the race. Fox Tal, who I thought was a very promising horse last year. I'd be tempted to back that horse each way if he runs. And Bangkok. And then Aiden's got a ton of horses he could conceivably run. Your old favourite Magic Wand, Steve, she's in there. I'm sure she'll run. And I expect if they could run her on the first and fifth day, they'd run her in those as well.
And she'd be game. She'd have no problem with that. Love it. Nick, let's... It's a delight. I mean, it's one of the things that, you know, we enjoy that, you know, when you see those that just they turn up at, you know, for every, you know, for every international assignment. And when it comes to the things that the American audience has enjoyed, Nick, the NBC coverage next week, another round of coverage.
Yeah, it's going to be unusual insofar as, you know, our on track presence is obviously quite minimal this time because there are so few broadcasters are allowed on the site. You know, really, it's right down pared back to the bare minimum. So what that's meant is that for the first 4 days, where the meet's on NBC Sports Network, we'll be taking the Sky Sports Racing coverage, and we'll be taking that from 9 o'clock Eastern every day. So we will miss the odd race this time because the cards have been bolstered and the hours of Ascot are extended. So we will miss the odd race, but you'll get all the important races. You get at least six races a day on SN in conjunction with Sky Sports. And then I will be involved on Saturday. So we will have an NBC presence on Saturday, and that'll be on NBC, the main network. And that'll again be from 9 Eastern. Mike Tirico hosting from Stamford, and obviously that's Belmont Stakes Day as well. So Kenny Rice, Brittany Earn will be at Belmont Park, and I will be at Royal Ascot. And it'll be part of a triple header of sports with horse racing sandwiching the comeback of the Premier League. So that'll be an exciting day for NBC and an exciting day for sports fans across America, and it's great that Royal Ascot can be a part of that.
And Nick, appreciate as always the preview. Where else and how
my,
else
my head
should
Steve,
people
my head
prepare?
Is absolutely fried. I promise you, absolutely fried. I mean, trying to work out when these races are happening, which horses are running, who can come, can't come, who's allowed to run, who's not allowed to run, which jockeys are allowed to come, which broadcasters are allowed to be on the track, which questionnaires you have to fill in before you turn up. It's exercising us all, but we're just very grateful to be safe and healthy and have some sport to be involved in.
Well, and of course, there's also the very important question above all else, and that is the coif. Has an adjustment been made, and are you able to? Because I was able to get over to my place.
Have I had a haircut, do you mean?
Yes.
My wife has cut my hair, Steve. She I'm not sure she really wanted to, but she she gamely stepped up to the task, and I think has done a good job. I mean, clearly you can't make the impossible possible, but it's better than it was last weekend.
Well, who was it that was having fun with you on Twitter with
everyone
on the windy everyone. On the windy day?
it's been an unfortunate state of affairs, but there you go. We do our best.
Speaking of some of the protocols in terms of apparel and such, is everyone going to maintain the dress codes?
No.
Or is that relaxed?
No, you just the suit. No, there's no There's no royal dress code this time. So, yeah, it will be a decidedly more Spartan affair. But luckily, the horses will make up for it. And, you know, in these times, we have been reminded the sport is all about the horses. And that's no bad thing. It's no bad thing to be reminded of that occasionally.
I think the next logical follow-up question here too is: are you going to be doing just some singing at the end of the at the end of the day? Because the American audience is
just on my own, just on my own, just one person
yes,
by the bandstand,
yes.
Just sort of waving a rather sad, flaccid little Union Jack with singing "My Old Man" and whatever. I don't know. I suppose we might find something fun to do.
Yeah. As always, even under the unusual backdrop and circumstance, people getting excited, and it's kind of one thing that's amazing, Nick, is how it sort of just bubbled up on everybody's as opposed to the extended lead up where there's so much anticipation. In this go around, it seemingly has caught everybody by surprise. Oh my God, Royal Ascot's next week.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, it's crept up on us all, and I'm doing an online preview tonight with a great panel: Johnny Murta, John Gosden, Lydia Hislop, and others. And it'll take place at 7:30 BST. So what's that? 2:30? Yeah, 2:30 Eastern. And Native Racing Welfare, which have been doing a wonderful job supporting the workforce in horse racing for the last few months. I mean, they do it all the time anyway, but in particularly through the pandemic, right, have been helping an awful lot of people with their emotional and financial issues. So it's great to be able to raise some money for them. I think we've got an online audience of 350 already, all paying £10. So if we can bolster the numbers any further, I'm putting it out there now, racingwelfare.com. They'll give you a code, and if you are one of the audience members, you are automatically entered into a prize draw to win 4 tickets for Royal Ascot next year. So that might be worth winning. And it might be something that that anybody who's listening might be interested in. So if you go to racingwelfare.com, you can join us tonight for a Royal Ascot preview.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought it up, Nick. Can North America, sometimes these are blocked. A North American audience accessible?
Honest answer, Steve, I don't know.
I'm going to check. Let me see. Let's see what we got.
I honestly don't know whether you can transfer. But if it lets you do it, and it lets you transfer whatever the equivalent of £10 is, which is probably about $12 at the moment, I should think, then great. If it doesn't, then at least I've put the message out there.
Well, and we have plenty of people that listen, that are listening to the stream, and that are potentially racingwelfare.co.uk. And
co.uk. Is it com or .co.uk?
Well, I on the search, when I tried to get it to go to com, it wouldn't find it. But by doing racingwelfare.co.uk, it did get there.
Apologies. It'd be helpful if I knew the email address, wouldn't it? But the web address, wouldn't
it? That's all
right. Yeah, there you go. You've got the deal. It's Racing Welfare anyway, easy enough to find. So
absolutely.
That's that. Steve, I'm going to have to crack on because I've got to go and pick up my one child that's at school from school. And I will speak to you very soon.
Nick, enjoy the week. As always, grateful for the time. And good luck next week.
Take care. Cheers, Steve.
Nick Luck, everybody, and you follow Nick, of course, on Twitter as Nick Luck, and I'm going to send out the link to this, and we'll see about. It looks like you're going to be able to. They've raised £225,000, and a little under 450 supporters, and it looks like you can do this. It looks like you can register in U.S. dollars. It's $30, or I guess you can It suggests 30, but it's also got 25. So I guess that would do it. And anyway, I'm going to send out the link, and you can watch a Royal Ascot preview this afternoon, 2:30. And Nick and Johnny Murtaugh and more. Sporting Life's head tipster, Ben Linfoot, and Gosden. Always entertaining and engaging, and Lydia Hislop. There you go. Let's take a break. It's past the top of the hour. We're in trouble here already because we got to get to Dick Powell, as well as let's get Tony Black and Haskin, and I think we'll flip-flop, and I'm going to check with Dick and make sure it's okay for him to come on the back end today instead, all right? But plenty more to do. But I wanted, I'm not ever going to say no when Nick has got the window to give us, 40 minutes like that and get you set up for Royal Ascot. And we got the confirmation from Graham Motion as well for Sharing's trip. So Sharing and 7 Wesley Ward runners. That's the American contingent. At the races. We're back after this. Get Tony in here for a few minutes. Haskin, Dick Powell, do some Hong Kong and more. And Rich Eng, get some plays. Rich had a good winner last week and a third with his 2 Churchill pushes. And still watching downstate to see the weather has relented here. But hopefully it's not often you hear me say, hopefully it's raining heavily in New York, but I am. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing 2-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.